or our sponsors. Enjoy.
Here comes the sun. Here comes the sun. I say it's all right.
Welcome to IPOS on Air with Noemi. Join us every Friday night at 7 p.m. only on Double Radio 92.7 FM. The call line is always open at 844-967-2789. And welcome back to another show. Today we're here with Ben and Harry. Harry is a he is very interested in like regenerative agriculture, and so that's what we're kind of be talking about tonight. And then Ben is running a composting company, which we'll talk about a little bit later on. And Jaden is our musical guest tonight. Harry, yeah. So we had originally met kind of in the Madison area working on agriculture. But could you kind of introduce yourself further?
Well, I'm Harry Bennett. Mm-hmm. I moved here from central Kansas, where I was an organic farmer for around 35 years. Mm-hmm. And moved here in 2011, where my three daughters reside. And I'm currently gardening intensively at the Eagle Heights Community Garden.
That's right, yeah. So how did you kind of get interested in, like, farming and agriculture?
Well, I grew up in a small town, mm-hmm. but both my grandfathers and grandmothers were adjoining, they had farms that adjoined. They were mm-hmm. fence line neighbors. Okay. And so I spent my summers from the earliest memories till I was in high school mm-hmm. going to their farms in the summer and spending periods of time. Mm-hmm. And they weren't shy about putting me to work.
We were also talking about like regenerative agriculture too. I was wondering if you could kind of talk about like what the like kind of definition or your idea of regenerative agriculture is.
Well, it has its basis in organic agriculture, mm-hmm. and regenerative is just kind of a new term that's come along that recognizes the nature of agriculture. Mm-hmm. As it should work, mm-hmm. that it actually replenishes the soil, mm-hmm. because any agricultural food production takes from the soil, takes the nutrients, mm-hmm. and a good farmer, a good steward, replaces those, and that's simply put how regenerative.
That makes sense.
I have a kind of an elegant, pretty nice definition that I really like, and what it says, the ancestral way of understanding the concept of regeneration teaches us that as farmers and food system workers, we are not producers of anything. We are simply stewards of energy transformation processes that the earth developed over billions of years and that eventually resulted in the vast biodiversity of life that exists today. At any moment, energy is being transformed from inedible to edible forms in a never-ending chain reaction from the smallest to the largest organisms.
That's a really nice definition, too, because it kind of encompasses more of like a relationship to like the earth in general as more of a...
Yeah, well, it's very... It mates up very nicely with the indigenous mm-hmm. people's concept of land. Mm-hmm. You never own land mm-hmm. in that time mind frame. Mm-hmm. You merely use it, preserve it, take care of it, so that those that follow will mm-hmm. have it to use. And that kind of flies in the face of some of the ways that agriculture is now approached.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I know that you were talking about kind of your farm in Kansas as well. What were some of the practices that you did to kind of like uphold that?
Well, we virtually tried about everything. Mm-hmm. I came to farming on my own with, you know, mm-hmm. with my life partner, mm-hmm. my wife. This would have been about 1974, and we rented a farm and then just started gardening, got a rototiller, then got into, you know, raising more and more of our own food. And then in 1978, we bought a farm, a 40-acre farm, and acquired a... I was born in 1949, and every piece of machinery that I ended up owning was manufactured the same year, right around the same year I was born. So I had a 1950 Alice Chalmers tractor, and I bought a lot of used equipment that could be purchased real cheaply. And I started, you know, using organic techniques, developed a system of rotations. I was interplanting between crops with legumes, Austrian winter field peas, alfalfa and such, to provide nutrition. And, you know, we had goats, we milked goats. We had an acre of orchard, about 150 fruit trees, all kinds of different ones. The majority of which were apples. And that morphed into a apple cider business. Because raising organic apples is difficult to not have blemishes. But cider, there are no blemishes on cider. You squeeze it and it tastes wonderful. And so we did that for a number of years. And and that was sort of a family thing with the other family. I guess that's another aspect of this is that after we had been on the farm for 4 or 5 years, another family joined us, and we basically divided the land and as an undivided half interest, and we were like all shareholders, the adults. They were they had three kids, and we had three kids. And away we went, and you know, we'd bale hay and harvest grain and feed, and then we, our one economic endeavor that was, we did have a, I think we got to as many as about 40 ewes, sheep, and would raise the lambs and sell the wool too, and but for the most part, the agriculture we did was sustenance. Our primary our primary drive was we wanted to eat very well, food that we knew where it came from. And had our hands on it. And so that was one of the big drivers of that. And then, I mean, we did have sales of, you know, we'd raise 5 to 10 acres of soybeans, and those would always be sold off the farm. So
for sure, not to completely like disrupt the beautiful image that you pictured of this farm, but you kind of had talked about being like a climate change refugee when I had first met you. So I was wondering if you could kind of talk a little bit about that.
Well, there were two significant events.
Yeah.
The first occurred in the mid-90s, around 1995. A industry, a company called Browning Ferris Industries, BFI, an enormous solid waste company with billions of dollars in income, decided that they were going to site a landfill that was going to be about 2 miles above me on the creek that I own both sides of that went through our farm. And I knew enough about solid waste disposal and landfills to know that
that wasn't
good. That wasn't a good thing.
No,
because you know rainwater percolates down through, and then before you know it, and they were very close to the stream upstream of me, so we fought that, and we developed well, like we said, it cost us. We had $900 in funding, and we had thousands and thousands of volunteer hours. And in 3 years, we were able to, through a planning process, they were denied a conditional use permit, and they were made to go away. So that was the late 90s, and that was a that was such a, you know, it gave us such exuberance for the possibilities of group dynamic to oppose something that is of no good for the immediate people other than the big company that wants to foist a bad environmental thing on us.
Yeah.
So in 2007, when we got a letter in the mail from TransCanada that we were lucky enough to be on the right-of-way for the Keystone, what would eventually become the Keystone XL pipeline, 3 foot in diameter, 1,700 pounds per square inch of the dirtiest crude oil on earth, the tar sands crude, was going to come through our farm. And it just, it was unbelievable.
Yeah.
And so tried to fight it. And the only good thing we got out of that was through an effort in the neighborhood, we were able to convince them to move the pipeline about a half a mile. And it ended up just on our southern border, but not crossing our land. So we didn't get our $20,000 landowner. And I didn't want it.
Right.
I wanted my land to be my land.
Yeah, and we can kind of guess, I guess, what happened, but we'll talk about it after we come back from this break.
Okay.
Here comes the sun.